So a lot of people have called my attention to this. Take a look at it. It's Elizabeth Warren, her campaign merch, a billionaire tears mug. A mug for all those billionaire tears because she's making the billionaires cry. Of course, the headline here is that Warren has appropriated our idea at the Daily Wire. She has stolen the leftist tears Tumblr concept and made this with it. And now we know kind of how the Native Americans feel to have Elizabeth Warren stealing from us and from our culture, if you will, in that kind of way. But that's not really the main point, in my opinion. The main thing is, look at the price of this, $25. She's charging $25 for a coffee mug, that makes fun of capitalists, and she's charging $25 for it. And that is really perfect. I don't know if there's any better illustration of Democrat hypocrisy than that. A $25 coffee mug making fun of capitalists. Down with capitalists. Look, we put it on a mug. Oh, cool. Can I have one of those? It'll be $25. And it's just for a mug, a little coffee mug. This is a $7 item at most. She's charging more than three times what the market will bear. It's one, you know, these little, the coffee mugs like that. You pour your coffee in and the coffee's cold in 90 seconds. Now you get yourself a tumbler. That's going to keep it piping hot for literally hours. Studies have proven, but don't quote me on that. But the irony doesn't stop here. Look at the bottom of the page. It says, powered by Shopify. Okay. Shopify. That's the company founded and run by, wait for it, a billionaire. So let's review here. Warren is using a billionaire's company to sell a mug making fun of billionaire capitalists for a $25 a piece. And also some of that money is going to go right into the pockets of that evil billionaire. So if you want to really stick it to the billionaires, then buy some product from them. That's what's being said here. Glad we could get that all squared away. All right, impeachment. The impeachment inquiry hearings have started, and I am honestly not going to spend very much time on it. One, because you've probably already heard plenty of analysis, I'm sure. If you're interested in analysis, you've already heard it. But two, because if I'm being totally honest with you, I am really bored to death by the whole impeachment thing. I don't care that much. I think this impeachment is clearly a sham. It's clearly partisan, clearly motivated by a desire to remove a president that the Democrats have never accepted and have promised from day one to sabotage and impeach. And all the rest of it I find uninteresting. Also, and this is completely anecdotal, I admit. And tell me if this is your experience. I'm interested to hear if this has been your experience as well. Here's my anecdotal experience. It seems like this impeachment story, which by all rights, if you look at it objectively, you would think be a huge story everybody would be talking about. It's an impeachment of a U.S. president. But it seems like people don't really care that much. It seems like people aren't talking about it. Twitter's talking about it. Cable news is talking about it. Political podcasts are talking about it. I'm sure if you're in D.C., people are talking about it there. But it seems that the folks out there in the country just aren't tracking this very closely and aren't discussing it, regardless of their ideology. The Clinton impeachment, that was all anyone talked about back in the 90s when that was going on. It was water cooler material, as they say. I was in elementary school, and it was water cooler material for us, which was bad news considering some of the material that was discussed as part of that impeachment hearing. But it was everywhere. You know, it really penetrated into the culture, into the public conscious, in a way that this impeachment really hasn't. It seems like. Now, like I said, that's anecdotal. I've been doing a lot of traveling recently. I'm in a hotel right now, as you can probably tell. I've been in a lot of airports, a lot of hotel bars. I've talked to a lot of people at various events that I've been doing. And impeachment just doesn't really come up. I've done a lot of, you know, fundraisers at various events, and I'm sitting around tables with people before I speak. And it's just, we're talking about things in the news. People aren't talking about the impeachment. I was down in the hotel lobby this morning getting a massively overcharged, you know, too expensive hotel breakfast. And CNN was on in the lobby where people were eating. And CNN was talking about the impeachment. Nobody was watching. Nobody was watching the TV. Nobody seemed to be talking about it. Well, you know, of course, CNN was on in the lobby because the only thing keeping CNN in business are hotel lobbies and airports. So tell me if this is your experience. Are people talking about it at the water cooler? Is at the dinner table, at the bar? I'm interested to hear that. Though, in fairness, actually, of course, I've never worked at a place where people literally stood around a water cooler and talked about things. I'm not sure if that's actually even a thing, but it's just it's an expression. You get what I'm, it's a general expression, so you get the point. But that's been my experience anyway. Hey, before we move on, you know, we're never going to agree on everything, especially, or anything really these days, especially something like impeachment. But I think we could all agree that we could all use more sleep. Getting a great night's sleep is easier than ever thanks to the world's softest sheets, brought to you by Boll & Branch. Everything Boll & Branch makes, from bedding to blankets, is made from pure 100% cotton, which means they start out super soft and they get even softer over time. Everyone who tries Boll & Branch loves them. That's why you can go and check out the thousands of five-star reviews. These sheets have even been loved by 3 U.S. presidents. They want you to love your purchase too. So that's why there's a no-risk 30-day trial and free shipping. So you can send them back if you want to, but you're not going to want to send them back, especially after you sleep one time on these things. You're not going to want to send them back. To get you started, right now, my listeners get $50 off your first set of sheets at BollandBranch.com. Promo code Matt. Go to BollandBranch.com for $50 off your first set of sheets. That's Boll and Branch, B-O-L-L and Branch.com. Promo code Matt. BollandBranch.com. Promo code Matt. Okay. By the way, here's AOC drooling over a drag queen. Watch this.
Thought it was amazing. It was incredible. It was fabulous. I'm like that Lady Gaga moment. Yeah. She's like stunning, amazing, impeccable, genius.
Can you believe it? From the revolutionary of our time. I love you so much. Thank you for being here.
That was AOC reacting to a drag show that she just watched. And this is why, and this is what members of Congress do in the year 2019. The year of our Lord, 2019, members of Congress go to drag shows and then take Instagram videos later with the drag queens. This is why AOC is a fake feminist. I'm more of a feminist than she is, okay? I have more feminist credentials on my resume than Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez because I would never describe as fabulous and amazing the appropriation of womanhood. That fella in the pink dress there in the creepy alien makeup is making a caricature of femininity. He is degrading women, appropriating and stealing from them, turning womanhood into a cartoon. What you're seeing there, does any woman dress like that? Is that his impression? But what you have to keep in mind with these drag queens, that is their impression of a woman. Would you consider, is that a complimentary impression? If you're a woman, do you feel complimented by that? Or does it seem degrading? So, AOC, the fake feminist, though, loves every minute of it. Okay, moving on. Do you know who Ellie Goulding is? She's apparently a pop singer. Just for frame of reference, here's a little bit of what she sounds like. And if it wasn't you, I wouldn't want anybody close to me. Cause I'm an animal, Now, for some god-awful reason, this person was invited to perform at halftime for the traditional Dallas Cowboys Thanksgiving Day game. Because when you think football, you think of that kind of music, right? Yeah, that's what you want to hear at halftime, get you pumped up for the second half. Well, sadly, tragically, football fans may be deprived of the Ellie Goulding halftime show. Which, talk about people talking about things at bars. I can tell you, that is one thing people have been discussing, in my experience. At bars, especially sports bars, you go to watch the game, and everyone's been talking about it. They've been saying, have you heard about Ellie Goulding? Ellie Goulding is going to be performing in the halftime show. Really? Ellie Goulding? Oh, gee, I'm so excited. It was a real conversation I had with someone. But we may be deprived of it because the NFL has partnered with Salvation Army, and Salvation Army is going to be kicking off its iconic Red Kettle campaign during the halftime of of during the halftime show of that game. The Red Kettle campaign, of course, those are the guys outside the grocery store with the red buckets and the bells and asking for money for poor people around the holidays. And that money goes to buying Christmas toys for poor children. It also funds various social service programs throughout the year. Golding was on board with all of this, and she'd even done some Instagram stuff where she'd been talking about working with Salvation Army and how excited she was. But then some of her fans told her that, no, the Salvation Army is anti-LGBT. And immediately she just changed on a dime, and now she's threatened to pull out of the show because of the Salvation Army. She's trying to blackmail the Salvation Army now. And she actually issued basically a ransom demand, which says, this is what the statement she published. Upon researching this, I have reached out to the Salvation Army and said that I would have no choice but to pull out unless they very quickly make a solid, committed pledge or donation to the LGBTQ community. I am a committed philanthropist, as you probably know, and my heart is... Could there be a more pretentious sentence than that? I am a committed philanthropist, as you probably know. And my heart has always been in helping the homeless, but supporting an anti-LGBTQ charity is clearly not something I would ever intentionally do. Thank you for drawing my attention to this. So this is like a ransom demand. If the Salvation Army, if they want me to perform, I'm going to need $6 million in unmarked bills in a bag of cash. But on the bag, it should say, to the LGBTQ community. You can meet me in a parking lot by the metro station at 12 a.m. Come alone. Now, first of all, this threat only works if anybody in the world actually gives a damn about seeing her perform at halftime. And, of course, all jokes aside, we don't. So the fact that she thinks she can threaten everybody. But if I don't get what I want, I am not going to perform during the NFL game. How does she think we're all going to react? No, Ellie, please, please. Been looking forward to this for years. Second, what does donate to the LGBTQ community even mean? What do you mean donate to the community? How do you donate to a community? So you wanted to take money away that was supposed to go to poor children around Christmas time and poor families, and instead give it to the gay lobby? That's what you want? So do you want to decide, Ellie Goulding, which of those poor children are not going to get Christmas presents this year because we needed this symbolic donation to be made to the LGBTQ community? Are you going to come in and decide that? Which ones are going to be deprived of that? Third, of course, this is just totally obscene. Golding is a multimillionaire celebrity. She lives in a $6 million mansion in South London. She's as privileged as it gets. And here she is trying to hold a charity organization hostage, trying to boss people around who give food and clothing to the desperately poor all across the world. Just think of the arrogance. Think of the narcissism and the privilege. Where you're going to say, I demand that this charity organization conform to my ideological preferences. Yeah, they help the poor, but it's more important that they agree with me. How absolutely gross is that? And this just goes to show again that the left is completely owned by the LGBT movement. They have to march to the LGBT drum. The demands of the LGBT come before even the needs of the poor. Think about the fact that she was going to do this show. She was on board. She was excited to work with the Salvation Army. And after a few Twitter comments or Instagram comments, just immediately she backtracks. All it took was someone saying, but they don't like gay people. Oh, they don't? Never mind. Never mind. Never mind. No, never mind. Just utterly terrified of upsetting the LGBTQ community. What are these people so afraid of? What do you think they're going to do to you? Who cares if a few of them are upset? You're helping poor people. What does it matter? If there's some people in the LGBTQ community who are mad that you're helping the poor, that's their problem. Why should that matter at all to you? And the fourth thing we should mention here is that the charge made against the Salvation Army is bogus, of course. The Salvation Army serves and helps all poor people, regardless of orientation. That doesn't even come up when they're helping people. They're not asking them, are you gay or are you straight? That question doesn't come up. The only reason they're accused of being anti-LGBT is because they're a Christian organization that affirms the biblical view of marriage. And also in their shelters, in the shelters affiliated with the Salvation Army, from what I've read, biological men are required to bunk with other biological men. And this is supposedly anti-trans, but actually it is pro-women. This is protecting women by not putting men in with women and girls at a homeless shelter. That's protecting women, which is something that Ellie Goulding should support and be a fan of. But apparently she's not. Because it's all about just conforming to the whims of the LGBTQ community. And let me say this, the fifth thing, and you know, not that I really care that much, but in terms of optics, the LGBT community, the gay lobby, in terms of optics, this kind of thing is just awful. This is awful branding. When you're going after a charity organization on the as we get ready for the holidays and Christmas time, and all they're trying to do is give toys to poor kids, and you're going after them, you know, you come off as arrogant, a bully, cruel. That's how you come off. Okay, now a word from Policy Genius. Tis the season to elect benefits through your workplace, of course, as we get into the holiday season. Most people know open enrollment as a decision time for healthcare coverage, but it's also the perfect moment to reassess your life insurance needs. To properly provide for their families, most people need 10 times the life insurance coverage that they get through their jobs, 10 times, which means that your employer life insurance is probably leaving you underinsured, and it could be leaving your family in a bad position. And that's where Policy Genius can help. Policy Genius is the easy way to shop for a life insurance plan that's not tied to your job. In minutes, you can compare quotes from top insurers to find your best price. Once you apply, the Policy Genius team will handle all paperwork, all the red tape. They're going to make it really easy for you so that you're just focused on finding the best deal, the best plan for you and your family. So when you're looking at your workplace benefits this month, make sure to double check your life insurance options. Then go to policygenius.com to get quotes and apply in minutes. Policy Genius, the easy way to compare and buy life insurance. So I want to give you the latest on the Dalyden case. This is reading now from a report in the Daily Wire. It says the judge in the baby body parts trial of activist and journalist David Dalyden has ordered the jury to find him guilty of trespassing at Planned Parenthood conferences and clinics before the jury retired to consider the verdict. So the judge has ordered the jury to find Dalyden guilty of trespassing. Planned Parenthood is suing Dalyden and his colleagues after they released secretly recorded videos of executives haggling over the sale and price of baby body parts from abortions in their facilities. Dalyden is contesting all the charges. However, Judge William Orrick told the jury that he has decided to find Dalyden guilty of trespass during his undercover journalism. Dalyden previously lost an attempt to have Judge Orrick removed from the case, alleging he was biased against the defendants. He said, "I have already determined that these defendants trespassed at each one of these locations. Because I determined that these defendants trespassed, the law assumes that Planned Parenthood has been harmed and is entitled to an award of nominal damages." Planned Parenthood originally sought $20 million in damages for trespassing, fraud, and RICO conspiracy against Dalyden. The judge reduced potential damages to $600,000, which is still an enormous amount. Now, here is the important point. Important note in the article. It says Planned Parenthood is not suing Dalyden for defamation or slander, and the organization's lawyers did not state that the videos were inaccurate or exaggerated. Now, I think that's really important, and that is a point that even as I've talked about the cases involving Dave Dalyden, that I don't think I've emphasized enough, that what is Planned Parenthood claiming as they are pursuing in various states these legal repercussions against David Dalyden and the Center for Medical Progress? Well, they're not saying that, hey, you came in and you made up these videos and you deceptively edited them and you made it seem like we sell baby body parts when really we don't. And that's defamation and that's slander and all the rest of it. If that's what Dalyden had done, then they could very easily prove it. And that's what they would be suing for. And they would have a great case. But instead, what they're saying is, no, it's not that what you discovered is untrue. It's that we're taking an issue with the means that you used to discover it. So that's their problem, right? And I think that's important because back in whenever it was, 2015, when these videos first started coming out, Planned Parenthood claimed the phrase they kept repeating over and over again, like an incantation, was deceptively edited, deceptively edited, deceptively edited. They claimed that basically this is all fraud, this is all made up, fake news, deceptively edited, and all the rest of it. But they're not saying that in court, though, because they know they can't get away with it, because they know that these videos were not deceptively edited, that these videos do reflect the truth, that these were actual conversations that Dave Dalyden and the other people at Center for Medical Progress had with Planned Parenthood officials. They know that. And we know they know it because actually back in 2015, they did their own forensic investigation of the videos, hired a third party to come in, look at the videos and find the deceptive edits. And wouldn't you know it, they didn't find any deceptive edits. They said in their own report that it was not substantially edited in a deceptive way. Obviously, it was edited for time. You've got hours and hours of footage being condensed down to a 20-minute YouTube video. Even though Dalyden did also release the raw footage you could go look at, but he also had the 20-minute, well, sort of, here's the main point. This is the headline here. But other than that, no, they didn't stitch things together to make it seem like Planned Parenthood was selling baby body parts. They actually were. Planned Parenthood has admitted that, essentially, implicitly admitted it by the fact that if you look at what they're actually suing for. So this is a case that should be, as I said, getting a lot of our attention. You know, if you're a conservative, pro-lifer. I think David Dalyden, being that he's done the most important undercover journalism of the century, he should be a household name, at least for conservatives. But he's not. A lot of conservatives still have never heard of him or don't know the name. Because for some reason, his plight just has not gotten a lot of attention or coverage. When this is real undercover journalism that he did. And this is why you have undercover journalism, because if you suspect that a powerful organization is engaged in criminal or unethical behavior, yeah, you could ask them. You could just go and say, hey, by the way, are you guys selling baby body parts for profit and changing your abortion techniques so that you could preserve the most profitable parts of the body to then sell to for scientific research? Are you guys doing that? Well, no, we're not. Oh, well, then never mind. That's not journalism. That's how the mainstream media conducts journalism, especially when it comes to the abortion industry. But real journalism is saying, well, let me go and try to get to the truth. And that's what they did. And there's a long history, a long tradition of undercover journalism where, yes, you are using tactics where you are falsely presenting yourself in order to gain access and get the truth. There's a long history of that. That's what undercover journalism is. And if they're saying Dalyden can't do that or he's going to face legal penalties, what they're actually saying is you're not allowed to do undercover journalism anymore. So this isn't just an attack on the pro-life movement. This is an attack on the First Amendment. This is an attack on journalism, a real attack on journalism. But obviously, the mass media is not covering it. I think at least conservatives should be paying attention to this, especially considering what Dalyden and his and the others at the CMP, what they achieved. And what they were able to reveal. It's just stunning. Okay, I've been meaning to mention this. I was in Chicago last week. I went to, I was speaking in Chicago, and I went to the hotel restaurant and tried to order what I thought was a sandwich. The description made it sound like a sandwich. In fact, I actually asked the bartender, what the thing was, because I was a little unclear, but based on the description, and she said it's basically a sandwich. Okay. So then they brought it out, and here's what they brought to me. This is what it looked like. Just look at that thing. That is French toast, powdered sugar, jelly, cheese, and turkey. Now, I'm told that this is a Monte Cristo. That's what it's called traditionally, I'm told, a Monte Cristo. I had gone my whole life without ever being exposed to this monstrosity. The good Lord had protected me until this fateful day. I guess, I don't know if this is a, on the East Coast, I don't think we really have Monte Cristos. I never heard of it before. Apparently people like these things. So is this a Midwest thing or what is this? Is this what you people eat? My God, it was revolting. It was a crime. It was a disgrace to sandwiches, first of all. This is like something that a drunk person would dream up at 3 a.m. And I know that sounds like a compliment maybe, but it's really not. This is not food. You can't just slap a bunch of crap on a plate and call it a dish. I couldn't go and scoop scraps out of my garbage disposal and put it in a bowl and give it a fancy name and call myself a chef. This is an abomination before God. We're lucky he doesn't send another flood in retribution for this. How dare you, Chicago? How dare you? First, you try to pass lasagna off as pizza. You put lasagna on crust and you call it pizza. Something that has to be eaten with a fork and you have the gall to call it pizza. And now this, revolting, offensive. I mean, I know this comes to maybe as news to people in the Midwest, but you really can't put cheese on everything. I like cheese as much as the next guy, but you can't just throw cheese on everything. So putting cheese, well, meat on French toast is, but cheese on French toast? You gotta cool it, okay? And heart disease is a thing too, by the way. Fortunately, I was able to, there was a Chick-fil-A right across the street. So I was able to salvage the day by tossing that garbage in the garbage can where it belongs and going to Chick-fil-A. Okay, let's go to emails. MattWalshow@gmail.com. MattWalshow@gmail.com. This is from Surinjin. It says, Dear Matt, what is your stance on tipping for food delivery when the restaurant charges a mandatory delivery fee? Also, why do you not join Klavan, Knowles, and Shapiro for the Daily Wire backstage episode? Sincerely hoping to one day have a beard even half as magnificent as yours. Okay, second question first. As for the backstage, I get this question a lot. I would love to do them more. The main issue is just one of geography. They're all in L.A. at the studio. I'm hiding in my cave on the East Coast, and I like my cave on the East Coast, but sometimes I do feel a bit like, you know, if you move across town or something and now you go to a different high school from your friends and you're still friends, but they're all making memories without you and they have all these inside jokes. And when you hang out on the weekends, they bring up the jokes and you don't really get the context, but you want to fit in, so you laugh. You say, oh, that's great. And they say, oh, no, you weren't there for that. You weren't there. And you say, oh, yeah, I know. I was just, yeah. And then you start crying internally. So that's sometimes the situation I'm in. But it's fine. You know, I don't feel left out. Anyway, what was your other question? Yes, mandatory delivery fees. How how does that affect your tip? Well, obviously a mandatory delivery fee is going to affect the tip, but the degree to which the tip is mitigated will depend on the delivery fee. So if, for instance, you're ordering $35 worth of pizza and there's a $3 delivery fee, yeah, you're going to throw a few dollars on top of that. You don't get out of the tip just because there's a little bit of a delivery fee. Now, if we're talking about room service, where there's a $5 delivery fee and a 20% tip on top of it. And after all the fees and everything are counted, you're paying $87 for a $7 sandwich. Well, and then they still leave room. They still leave room for additional tip. It's like taxes, you know, additional fees, room service, somehow like room service and delivery fee are two separate things. And then also 20% gratuity. Oh, here's, if you want to give more too, I don't have anything left. What else can I give? You want me to donate blood? Give an organ? Let me rip out my organ. That's what I'll do next time. I ordered room service. I would just rip out my spleen and put it on the receipt. Here you go. You happy now? I mean, really, you shouldn't be ordering room service at all. I only do it because I'm lazy and antisocial, and also I can just charge it to the Daily Wire anyway. So what difference does it make? Don't tell them I said that. Okay, let's go to the next one. This is from Daniel says, Dear Matt, I'm a daily listener to your show and a big fan. I have to admit, these past few days, I've begun to question your credibility. I've been watching your show with great interest this week as you've expertly taken the left to task over important issues such as the sexualization of children, the defense of convicted rapists, law enforcement, gender identity, family, relationships, and religion. But Matt, I am shocked, even a little appalled, that you have completely and entirely ignored the biggest news story of our time. It has been two whole days, Matt, since great American hero Sean Spicer was voted off of Dancing with the Stars, and your silence on this national tragedy is deafening. I know this is a tough time for all of us, Matt, and I'm sure you're truly heartbroken like the rest of us, but if there was ever a moment in which the country needs your leadership to heal and unite us, that moment is now. Well, Daniel, I was trying to observe a respectful silence. I didn't want to gloat in the wake of what to some people is tragedy. I know nerves are a little bit raw, but as you know, I was a staunch opponent of Sean Spicer's dancing. I believe he set white people back decades. So I celebrate his ultimate defeat. It didn't come soon enough, but I thank God it did. And may God have mercy on his soul for what he has done. And may God have mercy on all of us for what we have done in allowing this man to make it as long as he did on Dancing with the Stars. One other thing. People have asked me, why did I care so much about Sean Spicer on Dancing with the Stars? Why did I take it so personally? Well, I'll tell you why. Because dancing is my passion. It's my life. It is the thing that I cherish the most. It's basically my second language. It's how I express myself. Even in my home, when my wife comes into the room, asks me a question. Oftentimes, I will dance in response. I'll say nothing. I'll just start dancing. And then my kids will come in and they'll say, what is daddy doing? I'm scared. And my wife will say, I'm sorry you had to see this again, kids. The point is, Spicer was especially an insult to people like me, you know, people in the dance community. And I know it doesn't surprise you to learn that I'm a big dancer. When you see me, the first thing you think is professional dancer. And you're right. So that is why, one of the reasons why, I took it so seriously. This is from Jim, says, Matt, first of all, I just want to say that I'm a huge fan. I really appreciate your strong moral convictions on social issues. I hope you take this as a compliment. It's meant to be when I say that I think of you as this generation's Dr. Laura. Is there any chance? Well, first time I've gotten that, I have to say. Is there any chance that the Daily Wire would give you a second show where listeners can call in and you dispense advice to help solve their moral dilemmas? Second, and more importantly, what is your opinion on the existence of Bigfoot? Is there an as-of-yet undiscovered species of giant, upright-walking apes living and hiding in the vast forests of North America? Or is that just an old wives' tale? First of all, the phrase old wives' tale is patriarchal and sexist. How dare you? Second, didn't the guy the original guy who had that photo of Bigfoot, didn't he admit it was a scam? Wasn't there like a deathbed confession or something? Am I making that up? I might be partly making that up, but I'm pretty sure the original Bigfoot guy basically admitted that he made it up. Either way, I don't believe that there's an undiscovered species of man apes hanging out in the forests of North America. Apes who, even in the year 2019, are only ever spotted by people with cameras from the 1860s. That's my problem. Every person who's ever seen a Bigfoot has basically had the same camera they used at the Gettysburg Address. And that makes me suspicious. So I don't believe it. I want to believe it. It'd be cool if it was true, but I don't. From Aaron says, Dear Matt, my name is Aaron. On today's show, you argue that saying you are in the wrong body doesn't work according to the secular worldview because without a soul, you are your body. Playing devil's advocate here, I would respond that I am my mind, not my body, and I was born with a body not compatible with my mind, which would mean it's a birth defect, and so it can justifiably be corrected surgically. How would you respond to this argument? Thanks for everything you do. Huge fan. Love the show. Yeah, Aaron, but what is the mind? Again, this is from a secular naturalistic worldview, right? From that perspective, what would you say your mind is? Well, I'll tell you what it's not. It's not some immaterial, incorporeal entity that transcends your body. This is a material worldview. You don't believe in that. That's the whole point of being a materialist. It isn't like some kind of speech bubble hanging over your head, right? So your mind is not that. Your mind is not, it's not some kind of thing that hangs out inside your head behind your eyes, the way we sort of perceive it. No, from a materialist worldview, your mind is really, it's not anything on its own. It doesn't exist. It's more of an illusion as its own entity. Our from this perspective, our sensation or experience of having a mind as if it is some separate thing, that would be an illusion if you're a materialist. The way I've heard it compared when materialists are talking about their philosophy of the mind, I've heard it compared to digestion. Okay, so because the mind is something that your body does. It is a function of your bodily organs. Digestion is a function of your body. It isn't a separate thing. Your mind is a function of your body. So from this way of thinking, saying that your mind is female and your body is male is like saying that your digestion is female and your body is male. It doesn't make any sense. So what would that be? If you get bloated a lot, you're going to say, oh, I have a female digestion. No, makes no sense. It's incoherent. There's no way to make sense of that. So it seems like that you'd have to say, if you want to be a materialist and try to make the transgender theory work, you'd have to say that you have a female brain inside a male body. But that doesn't work for a number of reasons. Number one, the left would certainly deny in any other context that there is anything like a female brain. Number two, your brain is part of your body. It's not a separate thing that gets plunked in there afterwards. It is your body. Number three, so what you're saying is I have a female body inside a male body. Number three, by this way of thinking, male and female are just biological physical terms, which really by any coherent way of thinking, they are biological physical terms. So the only sensible definition of female brain is a brain existing in a female body. That is by definition what a female brain is. So saying I have a female brain in a male body, it'd be like saying I have female hands on a male body. Which, okay, maybe you have girly, small, smooth hands, but they're not really female hands because they're attached to you. So they're yours, and you're a man. Now, you could say, I have feminine hands, which I really don't, I'm proud to say, but some people do. You could say, I have feminine hands, just like you could say someone has a more feminine personality, but they're still a man, though. Number four, I go back to the same issue I've raised a million times. Even if it did make sense to talk about male brains and female brains, and even if they could be mismatched and all of that, how would you know that you have a female brain in your male body? Nobody has ever sufficiently answered that question for me, and they can't answer it without either A, falling back on gender stereotypes, i.e. I have a female brain because I feel sensitive and I like pink things, or B, using circular reasoning, i.e., I have a female brain because I have female feelings, and I know that they are female feelings because I have a female brain. And I go around in a circle. It doesn't work. So I don't think there's any way to justify that without either circular reasoning or going into the gender stereotype thing, which we're supposed to be getting away from those, I thought. So it seems to me that in order... if you want to even have a chance of making this work where somehow there's a mismatch and you are somehow mystically, even though you appear to be a man and you got all the man parts, you're really a female, you can't do that without introducing some concept of a soul or a spirit. You really can't. But the problem is you can't really introduce soul and spirit without introducing God. And if you introduce God, then, and he's a creative entity that's created all these things, so that makes him, at the very least, extremely powerful and extremely smart and wise, at a minimum, right? And now you're suggesting that that being accidentally put a female soul in a male body? Does that make any sense? I mean, what would be more likely? That God made a mistake and put a female brain or female soul in a male body by accident, or that you're making a mistake and you just think that you're a female soul in a male body, but really you're not? Who's more likely to make a mistake in this scenario? So that's the problem you run into if you're going the supernatural route. And so it doesn't work there. But then if you try to turn around and go, okay, now I'm going to go the natural route, the naturalistic route, it doesn't work there either. So it seems like it just doesn't work. The whole transgender idea, left-wing gender theory, it does not work at all. No matter what road you go down, eventually, and it won't take that long, you're going to go right off a logical cliff. And you're going to be floating on a cloud of nonsense. But thank you for the question. And I think we'll leave it there. Thanks, everybody, for watching. Thank you for listening. Godspeed. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe. And if you want to help spread the word, please give us a 5-star review and tell your friends to subscribe as well. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Also, be sure to check out the other Daily Wire podcasts, including The Ben Shapiro Show, Michael Knowles Show, and The Andrew Klavan Show. Thanks for listening. The Matt Walsh Show is produced by Sean Hampton, executive producer Jeremy Boring, senior producer Jonathan Hay, supervising producer Mathis Glover, supervising producer Robert Sterling, technical producer Austin Stevens, editor Donovan Fowler, audio mixer Mike Coromina. The Matt Walsh Show is a Daily Wire production, copyright Daily Wire 2019.
Congressional Democrats call 2 star witnesses to testify in the impeachment inquiry. Ambassador to Ukraine William Taylor and Deputy Assistant Secretary of State George Kent. And Republican Jim Jordan reduced them both to a sputtering pile of mush in about 25 seconds. We will examine everything you need to know about impeachment. Check it out on The Michael Knowles Show.